Hey there, Perimenopausey. I'm Anne-Marie McQueen, founder of Hot Flash, Inc., a global platform designed to inform, inspire, and entertain you through perimenopause. Season 2 of the Hot Flash, Inc. podcast is coming, and you know what that means. Interviews with some of the most interesting thinkers in the menopause space globally. We launch September 2nd with 12 episodes, but to warm up this week, I'm talking to Rebecca Ann Simmons, a PhD researcher at the Department of Sociology and Social Policy, affiliated with the Center for Interdisciplinary Gender Studies at the University of Leeds. I came across Rebecca on Twitter, and I wanted to find out all about her PhD research, which aims to uncover the multiplicity of experiences among LGBTQ plus people who are or have experienced menopause. And even though she's only in her 20s, I reckon Rebecca is already becoming a leader in this vastly understudied, misunderstood, and often overlooked section of the population. I hope you enjoy our conversation. Hi, Rebecca. How are you?
Hi, I'm good, thanks. How are you doing?
I'm really good. And I'm really glad I found you on Twitter, because I'm always looking to expand my coverage. And it's few and far between, really, finding people who are doing work. And so you started a Twitter handle, and you're doing your PhD research. Yeah. So I just want to start off and ask you, like, tell me the scope of your research and what got you interested in this area.
Well, I'm glad you found me. It's really great to be on here. And I've followed you for a while, so it's quite exciting. Yeah, so my research is the kind of the working title at the moment is Queer Experiences of Menopause. So I'm really inviting participants who identify as LGBTQ plus and who are currently or have at some point experienced like some form of menopause. And the kind of the aim of the research is really to kind of begin to fill the gap in the research, which is looking at LGBTQ plus experience, because there's very little, there's pretty much none. So really looking to begin to explore the experiences of this community, and maybe how it's different, what's going on there. So looking at how gender identity and sexuality might affect experience of menopause. Maybe it doesn't, but the research is just, we don't know. So that's kind of what we're trying to explore. And I've got kind of some different sort of maybe more unusual methods that I'm using. Not your basic stuff, I guess. I don't know. So I'm doing interviews, but I'm also doing body mapping, which is, it's something that's quite unusual. And basically the main premise is that the participants will draw like a freehand drawing of a body, their body, and then we'll populate this with images, words that they can think of, you know, they can paint, anything creative, populate this body with images and things that kind of represent their experience of menopause. So the idea is to kind of circumvent the need for kind of words and verbal, which can't always encompass the sort of the depth and breadth of the experience. And also what's really nice about body mapping is that research shows it can be quite therapeutic for participants. Like that's kind of where it comes from. And so I think it's a nice thing. I mean, the feedback I'm getting so far from participants is that it's quite an enjoyable, somewhat therapeutic experience. So that's really nice. Yeah, so that's kind of the research, which is ongoing, obviously. And then why I'm doing it? It's kind of a couple of different things, I guess. So I think what brought me to menopause to start with was seeing my mum go through it. You know, she's a straight cis woman. And even for her, I could see it was challenging in some ways. And it felt like a big thing, I think, for her. And we've spoken to her a lot about it. And it just kind of got me thinking that there's not that much out there. And especially when, but a couple of years ago when this was, there wasn't that much out there. It wasn't really being discussed, you know, pre-Davina McCall, all that sort of thing. And I was like, hi, you know, this is interesting. And as a feminist, I kind of want to know why it's not talked about, what's going on there. Can we reconfigure some of the narratives? Yeah, and I think also on a more kind of personal note, as someone who's been diagnosed with polycystic ovary syndrome, I think there's quite an interesting, I don't know, for me at least, I kind of related to some of the symptoms of menopause and the kind of the hormones being not what they should be. So it felt kind of personal for me in that I was curious how queer people particularly might experience this change, whether it'd be different, whether it could be more liberatory, because that's something I've kind of struggled with myself as a queer person who has PCOS.
Right.
Yeah, so that's kind of where I went from. And then I had great help from my supervisors, Dr. Karen Throsby and Dr. Anna Manzano. Sorry, Professor Karen Throsby now. Yes, who've been really helpful, you know, kind of crafting the research with me. Yeah.
And so how many people have you spoken to and worked with so far? And like, how many do you hope to speak to?
So I've spoken to 5 people so far, hoping to speak to around sort of 15 to 20 people, I think, just because I really want to focus on the sort of the depth of the interview and getting really kind of high quality, in-depth data rather than, you know, getting 50 people, but it's very brief and it's very surface level. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you talked about a dearth of research. What research is there? Like, what is there that you've uncovered?
In terms of kind of LGBTQ+. So really the main one is Tanya Glide. I don't know if you've heard of them.
Yeah. They run Queer Menopause. Yeah.
Exactly. And they were coming at it from, I think, a sort of psychotherapy, sort of counseling background and how therapists could kind of support queer people go through the menopause. And that's a really interesting piece of research. And I know they have really been sort of overwhelmed by the number of people reaching out who want more information about this, want more awareness of this. And that's why they've started the Queer Menopause Collective, along with a few others. I'm involved in it as well. So yeah, honestly, Tanya Glide is really, at least as far as I'm aware, pretty much one of the only people who's done any work in this before me.
Wow.
Yeah, well, it's crazy.
I'm not surprised because there isn't that much research on it in general, right? And so when the research hasn't trickled down into, you know, and there's all sorts of other areas like autism and ADHD, and there's loads of and anyone with any sort of chronic condition, multiple sclerosis, like all the different subsets. But this is different. Had you found anyone else who's doing any work since Tanya?
I'm pretty sure I've come across a few people on Twitter, not a huge amount, but I think I found a couple of other people sort of in my position doing sort of like postgrad work on it. Yeah. So I think there's going to be, I feel like maybe in a couple of years, there's going to be this cohort of like, you know, 10 people or something producing data on it, which is going to be great. You know, that's really hope that's going to happen.
And you're going to be at the forefront. Imagine what will happen when you go through menopause. It's going to be like, you're going to be the expert. So walk me through just what you're sort of hearing, you know, what are the particular challenges? What are some of the good parts?
So obviously it's early days and I haven't, you know, kind of analyzed the interviews yet because it's so early on. But some of the sort of initial stories that are coming through, I think, is particularly the lack of education among medical professionals in regards to queer and particularly trans experiences of menopause. There's a complete sort of lack of awareness and not an ignorance. It's not a deliberate thing, but just, it's just not been trained. They've just not been trained on it. So for a couple of my participants, it's been really tricky to access the required care, to get HRT. If they're on other kind of hormone regimens, that seems to be tricky. GPs are not sure what to do, basically. So that's been one key theme. And I think my participants have been very aware that it's not, that GPs are doing the best they can, you know.
Yeah.
But there needs to be more support for them.
Well, it's just the little that I've seen, it's hard to find like an informed GP before you're going through menopause. When you've gone through a transition, so then you've probably already had, am I right in that? Like you've had frustration for years with having someone understand what your particular situation is, and then you just have another situation arise where people don't.
Yeah, definitely, absolutely. I think that's completely 100% compounded for trans people. Yeah, just an ongoing feeling like there's not an understanding. Absolutely. And even for some of the kind of cis lesbian women I've spoke to, there's a bit of a frustration that the medical profession in the UK, the NHS, is very much presumes a heterosexual patient. And there's this frustration that every time it's like, oh no, I don't need contraception because, you know, I told you this last time, but you know, I'm still gay and all this sort of thing. Yeah. So I think it definitely compounds. Yeah. Yeah. Your menopausal, and then annoyingly, it's difficult to be LGBTQ+ as well. Yeah.
Have you talked to any trans people about their particular challenges, like just specific stories? Like, I don't know if you can share any of those.
So I've had, of my participants so far, 2 of them I think would identify as trans. And It's difficult because I've got one story that's really interesting, but I think it might potentially breach anonymity a little bit. But I think it's interesting that for one participant, pause seemed to be somewhat a trigger for kind of assessing their gender a little bit and thinking about what hormones they wanted and didn't want. Yeah, I think perhaps for trans people, it can be a little bit of a, well, for everyone, cis people as well, it's this key moment, isn't it? Perhaps the sort of the loss of reproductive capabilities. What does that mean? And I think that does have gender repercussions. And that's what I'm hearing from my trans participants so far, that kind of, that means something in terms of gender. Yeah.
And I know, like, going through it myself, it's like a sort of deconstruction of everything I thought I knew and believed. And every day I'm like, oh yeah, okay, that thing you believe, you don't believe anymore, that thing there. And so I want, you know, and even, you know, you hear at this time that people who had thought that they were, you know, heterosexual are reconsidering their sexuality, becoming a little bit more fluid and saying, I'm going to know, you know, because I've been living with this sort of societal structures in my mind, but because I'm questioning everything. And, you know, even like, and I don't know whether this is wrong to say, but even the non-binary and binary trans, like, when I think about it, I've thought about it in my life. There's so many parts of my personality that don't feel feminine to me.
Yes. Yeah.
And that I've thought about a lot too. And I don't really know how to talk about it. But is any of this making sense to you when you're talking to the people? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think having a combination of masculinity and femininity in oneself is not something that's solely reserved for trans people or non-binary people. I think we all have it. And I think it's great that a lot of people are now being able to kind of question and explore that, whether it means, you know, adopting a new label or just in your mind thinking, yeah, I don't have to be this, you know, heteronormative, just super straight woman. You know, I can embrace the in between a little bit, and queerness, and that's great. Yeah. And I hope my mum doesn't mind, but my mum has kind of spoken a little bit about that, about how sexuality and gender, it feels a bit different postmenopausal. So I think that's really interesting. And a lot of participants I know have spoken about, particularly sort of, as you were saying, sort of a reconstruction of the self a little bit, questioning everything, kind of in an exciting way, though. I don't know if it's felt like that for you. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is really great, I think, and exciting. Yeah.
Well, I call it sort of a hero's journey because I think you're called to question everything. And if you answer, you know, it's scary, right? Because you can stay in your belief system and maybe you're not going to be happy if you do that. But it's scary to sort of question everything and change everything. Yes. How about for you? You have a big age difference when you're talking to your subjects. What do they have to say? How's that reflect when you're talking? What sort of things do you go, oh, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting one. It's definitely something I was a little bit daunted by going into it. I thought maybe people wouldn't be willing to speak to someone who really has no personal experience at all. But it's been really nice. It's been almost this sort of feeling of wisdom being passed down almost a little bit, kind of hearing these stories. And you know, they've largely been neutral or even positive stories. So kind of thinking, you know, one day that'll be me. It's nice to... Nice to hear these stories and nice to have, you know, great to have them, the participants open up to me in a way that's so generous and open. So it's been a really good experience. Yeah. And participants have been very receptive and really, really great.
How are you finding them mostly?
Kind of mixed, but a bit through social media. So Twitter, some Facebook groups, and then also through sort of menopause organizations, sort of charities and other organizations, and even I think I've got some NHS people on board now to kind of share it with patients. So a few different places. I mean, they're kind of coming from all over, but it's great. Yeah.
Do you see the organizations making up to this? Do you see them making changes, or have you seen any signs of that? Sections, you know, just basically recognizing.
Yeah. I think it's slow progress, but I think it is slowly moving there. I went to the British Menopause Society conference a few weeks ago, Yeah, a few weeks ago. And that's quite notoriously a little bit transphobic. You know, they've refused to change any of their language on the websites, you know, okay, this woman, that. But they had a few speakers, one in particular, I can't remember the name, I'm afraid, but she was talking about inclusivity and equality in menopause. And she and another speaker both mentioned, somewhat briefly, but they still mentioned, you know, sort of trans people, queer people. And so that was refreshing to see. I wasn't expecting that at that conference. So that was really positive. And when I tweeted that I thought that was good, it was liked by the British Menopause Society. So I think they're kind of trying.
Yeah, well, habits die hard. It's hard. Like, it's, yeah. I'm not complaining. It's just when you've thought one way in for years and then you're trying to change and it's scary. Like, it's scary to, I know it sounds so dumb, but it's scary to try to want it. Not screw up pronouns and not offend anyone. Yeah. And that creates, I find myself, like, I'm a journalist, I'm used to talking to everyone, but it creates this little fear and inability to speak freely because you're afraid to do something wrong. And then I think it ruins, I don't know. What do you think?
No, I totally get that. I think a lot of us experience that, especially as, you know, kind of cis allies. And I think the important thing is just to come from a place of good intentions. That's really the key. And then if you do that, you know, you can always apologize, you can make amends. Most like the good intentions, just acknowledging when you make a mistake. And I think that's the key thing. I think that's what the trans community wants and needs from us as allies. Yeah. And I think embracing that discomfort somewhat is necessary to do the work. Yeah.
Like, we're not ending our lives now and just stopping paying attention to everything new that's happening. We're moving on in the world and we're all living together. I love people your age too, because I work with some young people and they're so open to talking about menopause. Like, there's no like, oh, you're old. Like, when I was in my 20s, I know for sure I thought, well, they're old and I feel sorry for them. Like, I literally would feel sorry for people who are old. Okay. I'm really curious about the body mapping. Can you just tell me a little bit more about it? Like, how it works and
maybe
a sample session, like what it would.
Yeah, totally. So traditionally, body mapping would actually involve in-person sessions with a sort of convener who'd be guiding participants. And this would involve drawing, literally tracing around the body, so a life-size outline. Obviously, I'm kind of adapting that a little bit. Post-COVID times, everything is online. So I've been kind of advising participants to freehand sketch the outline of their body. I have had one participant who's had someone trace around the body, so they did that, which was great. But the key thing is that you get an outline that you think somewhat relates to you. From there, there's sort of a few different steps that certain academics have sort of developed. I think Gastaldo et al. From some year is the one that I've kind of drawn upon mostly. But there's certain things that you can consider. We might start off by putting on any identifying marks on the body to, again, sort of relate this drawing to you. So whether that's scars, tattoos, whatever that is. And then basically, I think what participants have found useful is just to think about what menopause has been to them, what symptoms there have been. Yeah, so a lot of participants have kind of focused particularly on the symptoms. That's, you know, quite an easy one to visualize in some ways. And then I've also invited them to kind of show what's supported them through it somewhat, so that some people are kind of using names of people who are helping them, or other people it's sport or hobbies that they found supportive. What else? I've also invited some people to kind of to put like a motto on them, which has been interesting. Had a few different ones, which is really nice to see. They're generally sort of very like empowering, you know, life goes on quotes, which is great. Yeah. And then the rest of it is, you know, it's sort of up to you. And I've had lots of different things, people using nature to kind of symbolize how they felt. We've had one participant, I don't know if you're aware of the podcast, it's an American podcast called Hit Play, Not Pause.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So one participant had Hit Play Not Pause, Feisty Menopause, which I thought was very cool. She was a big fan. She is a big fan of that pod as an athlete herself.
How could the media begin to include like the LGBTQ without it being like pandering? Like, how could they meaningfully begin to include?
The main thing would just be to use inclusive language. It's just so disheartening to see so many people within the sort of menopause community just using, so, you know, solely using women, and that just excludes a lot of people who are still experiencing menopause. So, no, just saying people instead is the easy one. And I think, unfortunately, that's seen as a very political move when it's just, you know, it's just including everyone who's experiencing it. And then I think there needs to be, and I think we've come a long way since, I don't know, if you look back at the 60s, the 70s, the narratives which were around preserving femininity and making sure a woman was still woman enough for her husband. You know, we've come a long way, but I feel like the narrative is still quite, around HRT particularly, it's about you can still be you, you can still hang on to this younger version of yourself a little bit. And, you know, I think HRT does have a lot of positive aspects and is, you know, really great for a lot of people. But I think sometimes the narrative is a bit too focused on HRT, perhaps. I think we need other responses to menopause. It's not for everyone, HRT. And it's not necessarily some miracle cure, and it's not necessarily going to make you look like Davina McCall, and we shouldn't necessarily be aiming for that, you know?
Yeah.
Good for her. It's great.
Yeah, she looked like that before. If you had a dream for research in this, in all, across all these areas, what do you think is most pressing, you know, to be researched?
Ooh. Interesting. I think it would be great to have a study looking solely at trans men's experience of it, I think. Yeah, and just looking particularly at how it can be made a more positive or at least sort of neutral experience for them. I've yet to have any trans men take part in my study, so that's something I'm really trying to remedy, because it's such an important group to include. And yeah, I think there just needs to be more research in it, more knowledge about it, because it's not known. It's a bit of a blank space at the moment. Yeah, and I think that group kind of deserves its own focus, its own research.
I'm super curious about hormone therapy in both trans men and trans women and how it changes with this transition, and it's both sides, because you can have menopausal symptoms both. And yeah. I'm just curious about all of that. And I'm so angry because before I moved to the Middle East, 2007, I wrote a series. And I spent 6 months with the trans community in Ottawa, where I was with.
Oh, wow.
Because back then it was like the next human rights frontier. And I worked for a right-wing newspaper, but I sold them on it. And I spent so much time, and all those people would be hitting menopause. But I moved countries in the middle of it, and I have no, I don't even really know where. Oh, it's breaking my heart. I need to track.
Oh, my gosh. Definitely. amazing story you were doing. Really, a great cutting edge.
Yeah, it was an interesting time, but it was really eye-opening for me. But, and I've had a lot of arguments since then.
I bet.
You know how those conversations go with your people who don't know much about it. So can you see making this, like, what's your plan for your life's work? Like, can you see being sort of, what are your plans? And will you continue to think about menopause?
Yeah, I think menopause is something I will always think about. I don't know if it's going to continue to be the focus of my work. Obviously, I've got another year or two of the PhD, and then I'll probably spend a year or two, you know, trying to get published, raising awareness of it, doing some publicity around it. And I think it's something I really want to continue to have as something that's really important to me. I think I would love to continue working with the Queer Menopause Collective, helping them, supporting them. But in terms of my personal research, I'm not sure where it's going to go. I'm not sure. It might continue with menopause, but equally, I've got a lot of other research interests which also need exploring. So it's tough to say. Yeah.
I just felt like an old lady asking you what you want to do with your life. What do you do with your life? Well, I sure hope you keep me posted, and I hope I can speak to you again when you're finishing this, because I'd love to talk to you about all your findings, and
that would be great.
I can't wait to see what you're doing. So hopefully we'll speak again and stay in touch. Thank you so much.
Lovely. You're welcome.